Guten Morgen, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Steele.
How are you
Yeah,
doing?
good news, Steele. I had insomnia for like a week, but the last 2 nights I actually slept, and so I'm feeling great. I'm feeling happy.
You still look like a wreck, but I'm glad you're sleeping better.
You should have seen me a couple days ago, Steele. I look terrible, incoherent thought processes. This is a significant improvement.
I'm really glad, Dave. Well, you're going to need your sharpest wits about you today because we have a fantastic episode lined up. I'm really pleased, Dave. I want to introduce you to my friend Josh, who's in the studio with me today.
Hi, Dave. It's nice to meet you.
Hey, Josh. How are you today?
Doing pretty well. Working on on a vacation coming up next week, so I'm a little bit already in vacation mode.
That's perfect for what we're discussing today. I think we're going to talk about the apocalypse.
That's the main topic of conversation. So, are you vacationing in a barren hellscape, or where are
Well,
you headed?
it's pretty much a permanent vacation, I think, is,
Once the apocalypse hits,
yeah.
jobs no longer exist.
What are you going to do today? I don't know. Depending on the apocalypse, you could just kind of root through other people's stuff, collect things, be like, hey, I want to break into a museum, steal some dinosaur bones or something. I don't
Yeah, look for sharpened sticks, whatever you feel like.
Yeah, there should be a lot more scenes set in the Smithsonian for different apocalypse films. Like, that's where everybody's going. Let's hit up the Smithsonian.
Let's go loot it.
Yeah, gallons of water, food, canned food? Nah, let's go to the Smithsonian.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the apocalypse, I have some things I need to discuss here. Last week, we talked about our greatest ever haircuts, and it got a lot of buzz. People want to know, and they said, we're tired of just general haircuts. We want hair advice for men. And we thought, hey, well, there's three men on the show today. Let's give the people what they want. So, we want to start off talking a little bit about hair care for men. Josh, I think you and Dave have way more experience in properly caring for your mane than I do. First rule, general rule you'd give to listeners who need to care for male hair.
Well, first I want to understand, are we talking about just the hair on our head?
Well, let's begin there and then we'll work our way down.
Well, the first thing I'm going to say, Steelman, is if you have a raging dandruff like I've had for the past 20 years, you don't want to just have one type of dandruff shampoo. I have four kinds, and I just rotate them on a daily basis. You're going to get terrific results that way.
Is that because you just keep the dandruff on its toes? It never knows what it's going to get hit with next.
It doesn't know what kind of acid or tar is about to attack it, and it has to stay down.
Does that mean your head's in a constant state of tingly, pretty
Yeah, it's
much?
very refreshing.
I would say pretty much Dave's whole body's constantly tingly, from what I've heard. Not just he doesn't just rub that stuff on his scalp.
Oh, it's great. It's great for full body usage, and we don't need to talk about anuses this morning.
We'll get there. We'll get there. So, Dave, you were mentioning four different dandruff products. I guess I would guess you're probably going with Head and Shoulders. I mean, famous dandruff
Yes.
control.
Salsum Blue.
Yes.
Desinex.
I've got the Walmart brand of like the coal tar.
Coal tar. That sounds really
Yeah.
healthy.
Oh, it's very refreshing as you're putting this tar smelling paste on your head. And actually, I have a topical steroid I use occasionally.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, just to mix things up. Well, that's great. So that's the first rule of advice. If you've got dandruff, go all out on the assault. Mix up your attack.
So if you have bad dandruff, what happens if you shave your head?
I've never attempted to do it.
Would that be a
I'm
good thing
hoping
or a
it
bad
helps. It just
thing?
looks like fish food up there if he shaves his head. Oh man, that'd be terrible. It'd look like the
That's
Sahara.
hard. I'm afraid of going bald at this point. The dandruff is never going to be under control.
So dandruff, tell me about the symptoms. It itches a lot, but does it bother you because like hair is just falling out all the time, or skin is falling everywhere, or what's the downside of dandruff?
I think
What are
you could
the
look at any
upsides of
Head and
dandruff?
Shoulders. Steal your head's going to be itchy and you're going to be flaky. Very soon I'll stop wearing, but I wear navy blue scrubs as a nurse. So that dandruff mixed with navy blue, like, everyone knows I have dandruff. It's common knowledge.
And there's that awkward, like, if people come over to your place and they sit down, they're like, what's all this skin here? And oh, you're like, oh, it gets everywhere. I have flaky parts, but not on my head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's cover it all. Okay, so that's the first rule. We got dandruff. Let's talk about just general hair care. If someone has, like, a well-functioning scalp, what's the next step for them? Do you own a comb, a brush? What do men use?
So it all depends on the length of your hair. I found when my hair was getting longer, you had to use a hair dryer.
Hair dryer.
Otherwise, I know it's getting pretty fancy. Otherwise, you kind of get that stringy hair all day long because it's too long and it gets kind of oily. And, yeah.
So the hair dryer helps for volume as well, I understand.
Yep. Yes. It, volumizer. I think there's add-ons for that, maybe.
Nice.
I never used one of those. But.
And the hairdryer helps you, I guess, design the way your hair is going to go. I know a good friend of ours, Dan Jenijohn, used a hairdryer for years so he could get his hair to stand up in just the correct way.
Yeah, I think they call that molding. You want to mold the shape with your hairdryer. Let's talk about product. When I got married, I got a haircut at a hair salon for the first time in like a decade. And the guy did a really nice job. It was at Thorpe's, if you're listening and you're on the east side of Madison. And then he put a little hair product in. He's like, hey, do you want to buy some of this stuff so you can groom it? And I was like, groom it? Yeah, definitely. I'm turning over a new leaf. I'm getting married, starting a new life. So I bought this stuff by Malin and Goetz, G-O-E-T-Z. Seafoam extract. It had some cannabis in there. It was just a really, really deluxe hair product. And I used it the day after, or the day of the wedding. And then it just sat in my cupboard for 3 years. I just gave it to Josh.
It's quite good. It has good hold, good sheen. Yeah.
So,
what kind of hold does it give you? Is it a tight hold, or does it allow your hair to move? Like, what are we getting from these guys?
This allows your hair to move. It's less glue-like and more kind of natural.
Yeah, natural cannabis. Cannabis. Yeah,
that's good. It's the cannabis hold. Yeah,
relaxed.
Yeah,
a glassy-eyed hold.
Yeah, the glassy-eyed.
There's the kind that glue hold, where basically that's where you're going to do the hair dryer. You're going to streak it up.
I think of that as like the LA, the cheap, the neon colored glue paste that you got from those bottles from the dollar store.
I have one. It's called Defy.
Defy, because it defies gravity.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah. Dave, I know you're a longtime consumer of Surf Hair. You want to tell me a little bit about this product?
Steel, it's actually brings tears to my eyes. Because a couple years ago, they took it off the market.
You're not supposed to use it in your eyes, Dave.
Sculpting eyebrows.
But Surf Hair gives you the look of hair like you just got it out of the ocean. It was naturally dried by the sun. It looks like you're just an active male. It gives you kind of a loose hold, but kind of like, was this guy in the ocean today? I don't know. Maybe he was. But they took it off the market. But fortunately, my wife bought me a case of it.
From Bulgaria?
So lots of surfing there.
And so I still have 6 more bottles of it. I don't know what I'll do in 5 years when I run out of it. But fortunately, I maybe the apocalypse will have happened by then. I don't know.
Wow. Okay, so I think we've covered the gels and waxes. I noticed somebody put a note for hand lotion, but that may have been a typo.
Oh, Steel, no. When you're in a hurry, you don't have enough time to grab your bottle of Surf Hair, you just get some hand lotion right on there, pump it out, little squirts, work that through the hair, and you're good to go.
They call that the homeless man's conditioner.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It accentuates the natural oiliness of your hair.
That's definitely what you want to accentuate when you're going for a good hairstyle. So those are the basics. The other thing that we wanted to know about, we can cover this another time, but facial hair. Josh asked earlier about, we're just talking about head hair, or we're talking about face and body hair. Let's give a little bit of advice for those men who have achieved the state of puberty where they can grow facial hair. So Dave, you might want to sit this one out.
Steel, the one thing I can tell you, as I've been going through puberty lately, is that dandruff can hit your beard as well. I got flakes coming from this thing.
Man,
oh.
I've seen that before. It doesn't look pretty.
That's cruel.
No,
face dandruff.
The
is
navy
bad.
Blue scrubs. You got the flakes on the shoulders and on the chest. It never stops.
Okay, so let's talk about grooming for facial hair. There's lots of schools of thought for this.
Do you use a wax when it becomes unruly?
Great question.
I have combed it time to time. But I think there are lots of schools. You've got the people that do the very precise grooming, and that's a look that I don't necessarily agree with. I prefer just a more free facial hair. You let it roam, let it do what it's going to do. But if you are going to groom it, just do the mustache. I think that's what we all want.
I would say that's good advice, but better advice, if you are going to groom it, do one of those really thin chin strap pencil beards that goes all the way. So you could look like you're a backup dancer for like a Marky Mark, basically.
Back in the day.
Yeah. It's really nice when you have the super thin goatee as well. It's like a pencil mustache that connects to the pencil goatee, and there's a little thin pencil beard coming up the sides. That is the look of champions, especially if you're slightly balding. That looks even better.
Is it also good when you're fighting a moose and a squirrel?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All of that.
Okay.
Was that a Rocky and Bullwinkle reference? Yes. Deep cuts. You had a couple questions.
We met our quota now.
Checks coming in. All right. You had a couple questions for us about body grooming.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about spray-on deodorant?
I think there's not enough of it used. I think it should be exclusively spray-on deodorant.
Well, I don't know if you've ever experienced walking through a wonderful cloud of spray-on deodorant in the locker room.
That's the worst.
You're walking out of the shower and you're trying to get to your locker and you're like, do 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 do,
and you like choke. Yeah,
You have. I can't think of any brands of deodorant right now.
Axe.
Brute.
Brute.
Just inhaling Brute is a way to start the day.
I like Brute because they're like, we're only going to make one smell, but we're going to make it in like 7 or 8 varieties. You've got aftershave, you've got cologne, you've got roll-on deodorant, you've got stick deodorant, and you've got spray, but it's all just the one smell. They don't try it. They don't. Once you perfect a formula,
it's Brute.
Just distribute it as much as you can.
But inhaling
your
Brute,
man.
Yeah, it's life-threatening.
I like to think that these guys are just sharing. It's a beautiful thing. They're willing to share their scent with the whole locker room. Uh-huh. I don't typically wear deodorant, so I need some help. I just don't throw anything under there, so I appreciate what they're doing for me.
It's like vicarious smell control for Dave.
Well, it'd be nice then. You should announce that you're doing it so that other guys can walk by with their armpits open and be like, yeah, let's get some of that going around.
Anybody want to get onto the end of the spray?
Yeah. Hey, do you want to hit this?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've covered most every kind of hair grooming question that people have. Any last thoughts from either of you gentlemen before we move on to the apocalypse?
Hair care in the apocalypse might be a great topic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in the apocalypse you just make everything go to dreads. I think that's the move.
If it can't be cut by a machete, it's not a good haircut. That's the apocalypse rule.
Oh, but the dreads in the apocalypse, you have to worry about what's called the platypus dread, where they all kind of merge together to one mega dread, and then you're like head's weighted down and like a zombie's just going to rip your head off. So.
That's true. We used to call that the rat king when we were planning our apocalypse scenarios, yeah.
There's a frightening old man that I see on our street fairly often. He's in his 70s or early 80s, white hair, and just one dread right there. I don't know if I should make eye contact with this man. I have a few times. I've seen him upwards of 30 times, and I'm always walking with my little girls, and I see his dread, and it just, I don't know what to do. I'm just like, let's go, 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 go.
Don't look at the dread. Don't look at it.
Every street's got to have a platypus on it. All right. Well, the moment you've all been waiting for. This has finally happened. We've been talking about it for months. We brought Josh on the show specifically for this. It is the apocalypse.
Holy crap.
So for at the end of that announcement, do you play something from Bruce Willis, Armageddon, Aerosmith style, or you play like Carmina Burana? What do you play? Oh, wait, yeah.
We're going to play End of the World as we know it. That's I didn't have it queued up, but that was my idea. But we'll get some post effects audio in there. It'll be great.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So, so I have to ask Dave,
I'm excited.
What's your favorite kind of apocalypse?
I love this question.
I think it depends. If I'm in more of a contemplative mood, I like the road. I like the apocalypse where everything's already been destroyed and we're just sifting through the remains of humanity and everyone's sad and you just really get to feel the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. But if I'm in a more, hey, entertain me mood, I want to see the apocalypse happening. I want my zombies. I want my earthquakes. I want to see it. It just depends on where I'm at. What do you think? Where are you at with your favorite apocalypse?
Well, we were just talking last night. I do have a love for the near future. So it's like the outbreak has happened, but we haven't gotten to the point where humanity is doomed. We're still in that point where people might be a little hopeful that
we're
maybe
figuring
humanity
it out.
Is. Yeah. It's like, are we doomed or aren't we? Let's eat that guy over there. You know, because sometimes they turn to cannibalism during that phase because they're like, I don't know if we're going to have enough food. And it would be god-awful horrible if they accidentally turned to cannibalism a little too early. And, like, just basically your buddy they don't like, you're like, hey, Bob, let's eat his leg. And we're like, wait, they have
fools.
Plenty of food.
the cable was just out. Everything's okay, actually.
Sorry, Bob.
Wi-Fi went down.
But I think most apocalypses, you need to turn towards cannibalism at some point. But yeah, food in the apocalypse. What's your favorite kind of way of getting food in the apocalypse?
Well, there's always the canned food.
Clearly, Spam will last forever.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But then the whole prospect of growing food means that it's like you've gotten to the point where you're acknowledging the fact that humanity, as you know, and culture, as you know, it is gone. So you're like, can we swear?
If you need to. I'm in this apocalypse.
So you're like, fuck, I have to farm. Damn.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that seems precarious to me about farming in the apocalypse is there's a bunch of scenarios in which the Earth's environment itself has been badly damaged. Suppose there's like nuclear fallout. And so you're growing crops, but they're mutant crops. And you're like, I'm going to die one way or the other. Might as well eat this radioactive carrot. So there's a problem with that. And then the other problem is agriculture is inherently sedentary. You've got to sort of stay in the same plot and watch it and guard it. And it seems to me that most apocalyptic scenarios involve some form of necessitated nomadic movements. You know, like you got to stay on the move.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the apocalypse. It depends if it's something the Earth did to us, chicken fleas off its back like a dog, or if it's something we did to each other.
Right.
If it's a rage-based apocalypse, you're constantly running. If it's a slower rage like George A. Romero, you're kind of just at a steady pace.
Got it.
So.
Or if you have a wagon filled with soil, you can have your garden on the go.
It's true.
Apocalypse pro tip for everybody.
That just sounds like a nice thing for even a non-apocalypse. Garden on the go?
Yeah,
that sounds adorable.
TM, Dave. I got a trademark on that one. Well, let's talk about, Josh, you had the idea of categorizing various types of apocalypsi. What's the plural? Apocalypses?
Apocalypto,
I believe. Yeah.
Okay. So the first kind of apocalypse, the first one that comes to mind when you think apocalypse...
I go for natural disaster.
Yeah, okay. We can all name some popular examples of this. Obviously, Waterworld is at the top of my list.
Severely underrated movie. That people just talk about how much money was spent, but they don't talk about how cool it is to see Kevin Costner urinate in a bottle. They don't talk about just how amazing the whole film is. He has gills. He grows gills. Behind his ears.
I heard he had to do that for the role.
It was method acting. Yeah, he actually grew gills.
T- took a while. Well, he did two right in a row, because he did Waterworld and Postman, didn't he?
But that's also an apocalyptic scenario, right?
Yeah, that's more of the post-apocalypse kind of, we're recovering society kind of thing.
I see.
And that's a war-based apocalypse. So
other natural disaster apocalypses that really stick in your memories?
Do you think Mad Max classifies as a natural disaster, or is that a combination as well?
Well, what causes it? What's the direct cause?
Well, it seems like a lack of oil, but then also there might be a little war and a little bit of, the earth shaking you off.
So some resource problems. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's caused by a lack of oil, but Mad Max is always set in vehicles. Somehow Mad Max has found the oil that the whole world has been destroyed, but Mad Max and these group of weirdly dressed men have found the oil that's left.
Well, they just can't let go. I mean, it'd be much easier to build our society letting go of these combustion engines since we have no fuel for them. But no, wouldn't make a good movie. Got to keep them going.
You have to make oil gods and worship it and strap on weird accessories and chop off limbs. You know, that's part of the oil worship, I think.
That's how I do it.
Yeah.
I think there's a theme of a large disabled man wearing a mask in Mad Max films, and maybe all post-apocalyptic films, and he's scary in some way until you learn he's disabled, and then you just feel sad for him.
I'd never really felt sad for that guy, because usually he's the one that's eating people or forcing women to breed or something. That's the most recent Fury Road, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's got a disability, so...
Okay, all right.
We'll probably have to cut that.
I was going to say, that's like the apocalypse version of parking near the store.
That's probably the best thing I've ever heard. Well, Josh, I think you just won the podcast.
It's hard to translate.
We've never paused for 30 seconds just for everyone to giggle before, so.
Well, let other types of natural disaster apocalypse.
Well, I wanted to ask Dave if he's ever heard of this one. He might not have, but it was a popular teen novel. What are they called? TA? No.
Young adult. TA. TNA is a little different.
Yeah.
Dave's heard of that. But.
Yeah. It's called The Age of Miracles. Have you heard of this?
No, I don't know this one, no.
It's very interesting. For reasons unknown, the length of Earth's days starts to get longer and longer. And most of the book is how society reacts to the length of the day. And there's these sects that some of them worship the 24-hour day, and they stick with it even as the day is getting to be 25, 26, 27. And there's these other people that believe in the natural rhythm and that they should try to adapt themselves and their sleeping rhythms, their circadian rhythms, to match what's happening to the length of the day. And other things happen, and it starts to tear apart society. It's just... it's a different perspective on the apocalypse.
This is like the daylight savings dispute, but taken to the next level.
This is why Arizona is in the right. We refuse to accept daylight savings time, and we never will. Even if society is torn apart, Arizona will never accept it.
You guys are the natural timers?
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yes. No, the 24-hour. Yeah. I don't know.
The real timers. You're the real timers.
And it's just so hot. We don't want to extend sunlight or the day in any way possible.
So what about you, Dave? What are your other categories of apocalypse that you like?
Yeah, you have here disease. I think that's pretty great. I really enjoyed reading Why the Last Man. I read the whole series, I think, in like a Borders bookstore before Borders went out of business.
In some ways, Borders was Why the Last Man itself. I didn't get a chance to read it. I know the basic premise, but what did you like about it? What was the premise?
So the basic premise is every male on Earth, there's some disease that's attacking your Y chromosome, and everyone is dead except for, of course, one. And it isn't like a pornographic comic book where he just runs around and has sexual encounters with tons of women, because he's actually a very nice man. they just go and kind of try and figure out how to keep the world going with just women.
So I know you said it's not pornographic, but for some reason at that moment, I don't know why, I remember that it's not only him, but also his monkey that survived. I don't know why I remembered it at that point in time, but right? It's a monkey?
Yeah. Important detail, the monkey, Dave. Why'd you leave the monkey out?
Yeah.
And actually, the monkey's a huge detail. I don't want to spoil it, but the monkey may be what helped him survive the disease apocalypse.
Everyone should have a monkey.
Seriously, if you want to survive, that's actually a pro tip for the apocalypse. Get a small monkey. He may give you the antibodies you need to survive a disease apocalypse.
That's great. Speaking
or
of monkeys,
he may throw crap at you, whichever.
They may hasten your death because of a feces-related monkey disease. So what's the deal with
feces? It could empower your immune system, and maybe that's how he got over it. I don't remember. It's been a few years.
What's the deal with 12 monkeys? Speaking of monkeys, I never saw that one. Heard it was apocalyptic.
It's another disease-related one, and I think if you're going to have disease and apocalypse, of course, monkeys are going to be involved. But fantastic. Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt, some other people that I don't remember. There's a disease that destroys most of the world, but in the future, they want to stop this disease from spreading, so they send Bruce Willis back in time to try and stop it. And it's amazing.
You know, it would be a real popular movie if someone made this, where it was a disease that targeted you based on the amount of money that you had. Like, all rich people started dying. It could, like, look into your bank account. So there's, like, this big, huge hurry for people to give away all their money. And then once it happens, then the disease stops. And then the people they gave their money away to are now the rulers of society. It'd be a real role. It'd be like Trading Places, but apocalyptic style.
Could you write like a epic poem about that, Steele? Because I think that would sweep just the world by storm.
Yeah, I'm going to start reading it at Bernie Sanders campaign events. It's going to, like, people are going to love it.
What if the disease was on like $1,000 bills only?
Yeah.
And I guess it would only get like drug kingpins. Those would be the only guys that were dying.
Poor Scrooge McDuck would be the first to go.
He's swimming in it.
It's avian greed disease is what it's called. Yeah.
Just to get sidetracked.
Sure.
Like, how did he swim in all that gold? He just got the oil from Mad Max, lubed himself up, and went through the gold.
He was definitely lubed. That's for sure.
Oh
man.
Wait, so we've gone through disease, natural disaster. Josh, what else do you got?
I love the rage. The rage is great because this is one of the key like points of controversy between old school and new school zombie people, right? Because new school zombie people, more often the zombie disease is kind of connected to some sort of rage, which causes them to run and be strong and everything. But the old school people are like, dead zombie dragging limbs. If you're quick enough, you can dodge them.
So it's the speed. This was new to me. I didn't know this existed. But the idea of, like, an apocalypse of rage?
Yes.
I guess I saw, what was that movie with, where the guy's on his way home from work with his, like, horn-rimmed glasses and he just breaks and he starts going on, like, a shooting spree? With
Michael Douglas.
Falling down?
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
It's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Good guess, but no. That would be a crazy ending to that where it's just, like, a mass. Anyway, I don't even get dark, but
it's basically just like that, but everyone turns into Michael Douglas.
So tell me,
doesn't sound like an apocalypse. That guy's handsome. That sounds like a
rom-com, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so you listed a couple examples of this rage apocalypse. Tell me about one of them.
What I also find very interesting about the rage-based apocalypse is how the disease is spread. There's very interesting recent movies where they're spread via speech, via words, and then also via electronics, like the things we're surrounded by right now, iPads, cell phone signals, TV signals, radio signals. So two examples of that, the first one being Pontypool, which is on Netflix. You should all check it out. Also, The Signal, as the name implies, that's the one that's transferred via cell phone and electronics.
Wow. And how about raids through football or something like that?
No, yeah. That already happens.
That already does, yes.
Mini apocalypse every year. So the Pontypool, it's not just any words. It's particular words for particular people. It triggers them. And then once they hear that word kind of spirals out of control in their minds and takes over. And, like, it's basically that thing that happens to all of us where we hear a word and it loses its meaning.
It just becomes a trigger for insanity, huh?
Yeah. It gets stuck in your head. Or like that bit of a song that you can't get out of your head and it causes you to kill people.
Yeah, that does happen to all of us at some point.
Yeah, who can't relate to that? Talk about an apocalypse that hits close to home.
Yeah, you're just oh, I have that Taylor Swift song stuck in my head. I need to go drive into a wall.
Man, I bet there is a Taylor Swift song about driving into a wall. I don't know her music that well, but it wouldn't shock me.
No, she's a great artist. She's one of the great ones.
The obvious apocalypse, the human slavery, human subjugation, human destruction from the imminent threat of super intelligent, aggressive aliens.
Of course, of course.
This one, talk about an old Hollywood trope. Mars Attacks, one of the classics in the genre. All of Ed Wood's movies were really good.
The classic 80s miniseries where they take off their faces and their lizards underneath.
Whoa.
That's good. The lizard people came in to take over the world.
Of course, there's the epic Independence Day, which...
Yeah. I saw that in the theaters. That's the first movie we talked about so far that I've seen.
Nice one. They're making Independence Day 2, guys.
Wow. Is Bill Pullman in it?
I hope so.
They're bringing back everybody except for Will Smith. So, it's going to be really good.
Will Jaden Smith be in it instead?
That is one that I would pay to see. That kid, he is another talented one. Him and Taylor Swift, boy, they got futures.
The future looks bright for those two. Wasn't there like another movie that came out around the same time as Independence Day, but was basically the same plot? Does anyone remember this? I'm asking a really great movie-related question.
Straight to DVD, I think it's called Alien Invasion?
Yeah, that's probably it. Sure, sure.
Wasn't there another movie that came out with aliens?
I'm trying to think. It might have been in the 1990s, one of those years.
Oh, E.T. You're talking E.T. Yeah.
I totally forgot about Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's a good one.
Alien Invasion one, yeah.
What about the movie... I don't know the names of any movies. There's a bunch of old people who are like balls of light and they're wearing fake skins.
Cocoon?
Yeah.
Cocoon.
I mean,
Cocoon.
Steve Guttenberg, come on.
Is that an apocalypse movie? I don't remember.
Any movie that Steve Guttenberg stars in is an apocalypse movie.
I mean, Steve Guttenberg, that is oatmeal guy. Come on.
Wilford Brimley? Yeah. Okay, well, here's the thing. I'm going to make this really deep here. We haven't covered this in great depth, but the word apocalypse itself is a Greek word which means uncovering. So in a way, Cocoon is an apocalypse since these alien balls of light shed their skins. It is an uncovering in a way.
Or it could be. It could be. Because Steve Guttenberg has his shirt off for most of it. And
talk about an uncovering. Yeah. Woo! Talk about a carpet to remember.
But well, I think that my real... if I had to pick a favorite apocalypse, I like the ones where we are responsible for it ourselves. The war, the something that humans have done has destroyed society. They're the warning apocalypses. This is like, hey guys, watch where we're going because we're going to end up in this apocalypse.
Like the Terminator, where you have to send a message from the future.
Yes, yes. Even though the newest Terminator film was terrible, it warns you to be, hey, be careful with technology.
Indiana Jones. The face melting thing. That's definitely, got to be careful.
Yeah, don't open up too many arcs in very populated areas. Yeah.
It's a warning to us all.
So is it supposedly like bones of Jesus that melts everybody's faces? Because that's what's in the ark, right?
Yeah.
You guys need to go back to your Bible. The ark is carrying... I believe the shards of the Ten Commandments.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't know why that melts everybody's face, but it does.
It's not the bones of Jesus. He was resurrected. He didn't leave any bones behind.
Yeah.
It's the Ten Commandments, obviously. Come on. Thanks, Dave. You really cleared that one up.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, but that, of course, brings us to the religious apocalypse. That's another, I mean, that's where this whole thing comes from, is the Bible and religious belief teaches us there is going to be an end of times. It's interesting that a lot of religion, a lot of people feel like there's an end of times coming, that that all of this is going to come to an end, and no one knows when, but it's going to happen. Do you think there's a reason why we think about this and think like there's going to be an end?
Catholic guilt.
I don't know. See, for me, even when I was more religious than I am now, eschatology, like the study of the end times, always seemed like the most worthless. I never enjoyed it. I just wanted to avoid it and pretend like it wasn't part of my religion.
Well, I'm still a faithful Mormon, and so that it's part of the religion to gather your year's supply of food.
Sure.
And there's people that get way into this. They build bomb shelters under their houses, and they do all this stuff to be prepared for the end of times. And they make jokes about I have my stock of guns and stuff. They're ready, and I don't know. I do. I have almost a year's supply of food in my basement, and I don't really have it planned because I think there's going to be a terrible apocalypse. I do it because I don't know, I might lose my job. There might be some reason I need a year's supply of food, and there very well could be a natural disaster where it'd be very helpful to be ready to have my machete on hand or something. Not machete, but just to have my bottles of water. And I think that those things could very likely happen. And maybe the end times will come. I don't know. But I'm comfortable with the idea of just being prepared for the unknown.
Preparing the notes for the show made me think a lot about the apocalypse and how it's portrayed in popular media. And it made me think that perhaps it's a coping mechanism to deal with our inability to talk about death and its inevitability. And that this is a way to kind of frame it so that it doesn't scare you as much, even though a lot of the movies are scary.
I think that's a big part of it, where in the apocalypse, death becomes way less personal. It's no longer like, I am going to die and society is going to keep going. It's like, society is going to end, but I'm going to try to survive somehow.
Yeah, the ubiquity of it makes it less impactful on the individual, right? We're all going to die. And it's also kind of speaks to the selfish nature of the modern person, right? Huh. Like, if I die,
the world ends.
The world ends, right? Nope, we're all going to die. So it kind of speaks to Hollywood a little bit.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I think, Dave, your point about emergency preparedness is really awesome, because one of the genres we just touched about was the zombie genre. And I have a brother-in-law who's really into zombies and zombie books and zombie movies. And so every year for Christmas, we draw one person, have to make them a gift. And so 2 years ago, I had him, and I made him a zombie preparedness, like, emergency kit as his Christmas gift and mailed it off to him. So it was a box, and it had like a hand-scrawled note about, they're coming, there is no time. And it made it look like it was burned and covered in blood. And then I got these like artist prints of different zombie art that I had found at like an art thing. And then I put a bunch of stuff that he might need, like an old rusty screwdriver, a hammer, like there was a set of flares. Josh helped me put the kit together. We had a bunch of ideas. We had a big box of Twinkies, because those will never go old. Some bacon. What else was there? Matches.
Was there any canned food?
There was canned food. Yeah. We had some Spam. But he opened it and he loved it. He said it was the best gift he'd had in all of forever. But this is like a thing. There's a whole bunch of like zombie preparedness things that Josh was bringing to my attention.
Well, one of my hobbies, I actually, it's kind of weird, but when I drive around Madison, I look at buildings and assess their zombie penetrability.
But that isn't weird. Everybody, I do that all the time. I'm like, yes, if the zombies are coming, I'm headed here. You have to be ready. I live right by the Mormon Mesa Temple. There's a large metal fence surrounding the whole area. There's green grasses where if you need to grow crops at some point, and you've got secure stone building right there.
There's a building on the near east side of Madison that is actually on stilts, and the point of ingress is just in the center, like in this little column for the building. And you could, like, the pillars, you could perfectly fence them off and actually, like, tear up the parking lot and do farmland underneath. Well, I guess you wouldn't get enough sun. You could do it on the roof instead. But the fact that it's on stilts and one point of ingress, I mean,
pretty prepared. I was also made aware the CDC, the official arm for the Center for Disease Control for the U.S. government, now has a website.
Yes, not only a website, a full comic depicting what you should do in case of a zombie outbreak. And they go and they create their kit. And, well, actually, he gathers up his kit and his dogs with him. It's all cute, kind of, 50-style public service announcement. Like, oh, the little dog needs his dog food, too, and can of food and all that good stuff. Tools and...
And people think that our tax money goes to waste when it goes to the federal government. Proof that it does not.
No, not at all.
You also had this, there's a zombies safe house competition.
Yes,
our listeners may be interested in this.
This is great. It kind of gets back into old medieval building structures, because those would work if you have herds of people coming at you, right? So there's drawbridges. A book I read recently, like, they had all the buildings were built with stairs that would retract, and basically all the entrances for buildings were elevated, and the way to get into them would expand and retract. Because if there was a zombie outbreak, you don't want them able to get in your house. And in fact,
sounds like the floating cities in Ringworld.
Yes, World War Z.
Naturally, yeah.
What was the first, the zombie survival guide?
Yeah, Max Brooks.
Yeah, that was one of their recommendations. And they're like, if the zombie outbreak happened and you're on the second floor, you should knock out all of your stairs. Take an axe, take them all out.
Yeah. And this is great for keeping away just unwanted visitors in general as well.
They don't have to just be zombies.
No, you can just apply a lot of these tips just in your daily life. Just, you may not feel social.
I could say that's an interesting reaction to Mormon missionaries to hack away all your stairs.
We'll still get there, guys.
The Mormons
we'll
are coming. Hack the stairs.
Can't tell you the number of times that happened when we were out in England. Seriously. Like, it looks like there used to be. Well, I guess they're gone.
This whole block, all the stairs are gone.
It's crazy. Well, gentlemen, I think we've given people a fairly thorough coverage of apocalyptic scenarios. Any last thoughts?
We may have beaten it to death.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. How about any recommendations for apocalypse-related film or literature that you think is essential?
Yeah. Yes.
Go for it.
Oh.
Three books by Margaret Atwood. There's a trilogy. It's called the Mad Atom Trilogy. It's a dystopian future post-apocalyptic scenario. It's speculative fiction, she calls it, rather than science fiction, because all of the things that take place in the book are based on technologies or ideas which exist in the world today, but which have been extended to a possible future. The first one is called Oryx and Crake. The second is called The Year of the Flood. And the third one is called Mad Atom. And they're awesome. A lot of genetic technology, strange science, violence, weird, just weird stuff. Very good books.
Exciting.
You have a recommendation, Dave?
You know, I just finished reading a book by Dave Eggers called The Circle that I thought was pretty interesting. It's not necessarily apocalypse, but it's basically just social media taking over the entire world, totalitarianism through mob rule of social media. It definitely sounds like a social media apocalypse to me.
Definitely.
The worst kind. I'm glad those aren't a genre of films.
If that comes to be a genre of films, you'll just feel sick to your stomach. You'll just throw up.
A completely opposite perspective on that, and maybe a reaction to that, is The Last Days. It's a Spanish film where it's a type of disease that spreads among people where they have a physical reaction to going outside, basically. You know, I really feel like it is making a commentary on this social connectedness and how I don't actually know where I'm going with this.
But the idea is that you become so disconnected from other people that you die?
it's actually just the act of going outside. It's literally agoraphobia. Like, it's you're staying physically with people in confined spaces, and that keeps you alive because the outside causes such a high level of anxiety that it basically stops your heart. Which, whoa, on the surface, it sounds a little silly, but yeah, it's just an interesting perspective, I guess.
Okay, check that one out. The last days. Well, gentlemen, we have apocalypsized this very well. It's time for some Unchained Melodies. And would you believe it? We're calling this episode Songs Related to the End of the World. And before we get into this, Josh, you sent me an incredible link that was published this week. Perfect timing.
Yes.
From The Verge, I think it was?
Yes, it was from The Verge. A custom little bit of HTML script for you to make decisions on the song you listen to for the apocalypse that would kill you.
It's awesome. Like a choose-your-own-adventure where you have to answer a couple of questions, and at the end it tells you, oh, you are listening to, and it's the apocalyptic song that fits your choices. So go check that out. We'll put a link up on the website. Well, I'm going to start. The first apocalypse song that I think is worth playing... This is from Wyclef Jean, and this was from the album The Carnival, and it is titled, fittingly, Apocalypse.
It's a clever title. I like it.
Looked at my little brother, said, you high as hell, man. Apocalypse.
1, 2, the headline news is broke through.
Apocalypse.
3, 4, soldier, 100 horsemen at your door.
Apocalypse.
5, 6, you want it dead or alive?
Get a miss.
We are. Arrival of the carnival. New beats I never recycle. While you looking for samples, you might get trampled. Surprise, hey, I'm back with lightning and thunder. I heard you over saying I'm a one-hit wonder. You done with summer, winter, refugees till infinity. When I'm done, collect royalties from record companies. Clouds getting darker, sun's getting nearer. I turn an atheist to a God-fearing believer.
That sounds like what Josh was talking about earlier, the scrap of music going to get into your head and make you go insane. So I think it totally fit.
I'm glad you liked it so much, Dave.
It's going to stick with him and others.
All right. Josh or Dave, you got one you want to share with us?
Had no idea, actually, that 99 Red Balloons was a war apocalypse song, and I was blown away by the lyrics, considering it's a pop song from the 80s. I didn't realize it was so heavy in its subject matter.
Those socially conscious East Germans, huh?
Mm-hmm. You and I in a little toy shop, buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got, set them free at the break of dawn, to one by one. Back at base, box in the software, flash the message. Something's out there, floating in the summer sky. 99 red balloons go by.
Just to summarize at the end, the final verse is, in every one a red balloon, it's all over and I'm standing pretty in the dust that was a city. If I could find a souvenir just to prove the world was here, and here it is, a red balloon, I think of you and I let it go.
Apocalypse for sure. Never sounded so funky or so pretty. That was great. All right, Dave. Apocalypse SS.
I'm ready for it. I don't know if you guys are ready for it. This is a classic 1960s protest song, actually called Eve of Destruction. This is this guy's only major hit, but it's fantastic.
It is so good. Barry Maguire.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war. But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
I couldn't help but laugh. I had a ninth grade geography teacher. Part of his lesson plan, he'd just have us, a room full of 30 ninth graders, sit in silence and listen to songs sometimes. And we listened to that song, and we listened to Scorpions.
Winds of Change?
Winds of Change. He's like, just listen. Listen to this. Think about what we read and just listen. Take it all in.
Man, that's effective pedagogy right there. You remember it today.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Is that involved in your Master's of Education program? Just, hey, everybody just sit and just listen to this.
It's Barry Maguire. He means every word. All right, well, I was going to play Johnny Cash, The Man Comes Around. It's kind of a Jesus Second Coming song. If you get a chance, listen to it. But instead, this one fits a bit better with Barry Maguire. This is Tom Waits, and the song is The Earth Died Screaming.
Brood is on the midway, Jacob's in the hole. Monkey's on the ladder, devil shovels coal. We're crows as big as airplanes, lion has three heads, and someone.
Looking for songs to play for your triplets to put them to bed, Dave. I highly recommend The Earth Died Screaming.
Oh yeah, that sounds good, because we only have it's only probably once a night that one of them wakes up screaming with a nightmare, so we'd like each of them to wake up screaming. Yeah.
All right, Josh, what's your second choice?
I have another
for us?
One. This one has a lot of F-bombs, but it's from my angsty teenage years, and it's For the Apocalypse. It's Tool Enema, or however you say that. It might be Enema, because it's a lot about telling the people in L.A. that he hopes there's an apocalypse that destroys all of Hollywood, actually.
About a psychologically well-adjusted song.
I forgot any thought I had before I just heard that song. I don't know what on earth I could have been saying. And it reminds me of being 17, driving to my job at McDonald's, listening to Tool, and just thinking, man, my life is not that good.
That's interesting. I was 17. Driving to my buddy's half pipe thinking, man, my life is way better than that.
It's all about points of comparison. Okay, Dave, take us out. What's our last apocalyptic melody for the day?
Guys, this is a fantastic song. Echo and the Bunnymen. I'm not a huge fan of them. I don't know them that well, but I love this song. It's more of a personal apocalypse of death stalking you and coming to end your life, but it's so good. The Killing Moon.
Under blue moon I saw you, so soon you'll take me up in your arms, too late to beg you or cancel it, though I know it must.
Your lips a magic world. Your sky all hung with jewels. The killing moon will come too soon. Against your will, through the thick and thin, he will wait until you give yourself to him.
Echo and the Bunnymen, what a ridiculous name, but what a good song.
All right,
well, that's the Apocalyptic Melodies flavor of Unchained Melodies this week. As always, we're going to end with a bit of book wisdom. And Dave, I think the honor is yours today.
I love the apocalypse. I shared about this book a little bit earlier, The Circle. And it's basically a technology company. It's social media just runs wild. And they start to just mob rule and just kind of take over the internet. One of their driving forces is they want all information to be out there for everybody. Just information everywhere. And the main character is a young lady that joins the company. And at some point, she gets involved in one of their Friday presentations with one of the leaders of the company. And I'm going to read a conversation that they have in front of just a huge group of people. "We were talking about what you saw as the impulse to keep things to yourself. Well, it's not something I'm proud of, and I don't think it rises above the level of simple selfishness. Now, I really understand that. I understand that we're obligated as humans to share what we see and know, and that all knowledge must be democratically accessible. It's the natural state of information to be free. Right. We all have a right to know everything we can. We all collectively own the accumulated knowledge of the world. Right, said May. So what happens if I deprive anyone or everyone of something I know? Aren't I stealing from my fellow humans? Indeed, Bailey said, nodding earnestly. May looked to the audience and saw the first row, the only faces visible, nodding too. And given your way with words, May, I wonder if you can tell us this third and last revelation you've made. What did you say? Well, I said privacy is theft. Bailey turned to the audience. Isn't that an interesting way of putting it, guys? Privacy is theft. The words now appeared on the screen behind him in great white letters. Privacy is theft. May turned to look at the three lines together. She blinked back tears, seeing it all there. Had she really thought of all that herself? And the three lines are, secrets are lies, sharing is caring, and privacy is theft.
Wow, that sounds good. That sounds very Delillian, Dave.
It just made me, not want to go on Facebook ever again or share anything with anyone. I think that so oftentimes it's easy just to get caught up and just this mob of people suddenly denouncing something. Just the mob, there's some issue where everyone's on this one extreme side of the issue, and there no longer can be a moderate view because everyone on the internet says, this is how it is. And if you're on the other side of the issue, you're the worst. And if you even just say, well, either side could be correct, then you're still the worst because you can't have moderation.
And I just think of one that happens when it's a small group of people, when it's like five people and feelings are hurt, and then amplifying that just makes me feel gross.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. We got some apocalyptic wisdom. Sharing is caring, everybody. Please distribute this episode through your social media networks. Well, it was great having you on, Josh. Talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping to be back.
Off the chain. Off the chain.
Did anyone want to hear an ad for the University of Phoenix real quick?
Yeah, they do. They do a great job down there. You can get $1,500 a course for each online course you teach there. I'm pretty sure that's an option, actually. You pay the extra $200 and you don't have to do the coursework.
You just get the diploma. And when you know the college is run for profit, you know it's run for the right reason.